Welcome to the Sleaze Cast with Doc Sleaze.
Well, here we are again. Sleaze Cast 3, incredibly. As I promised last time, slight change in format this time. Last couple of times, obviously, I recorded this in my car. In those little periods between jobs, whatever, when I park up in lay-bys and car parks outside rural country churches and like to take a breather. This time, see, change of venue. This, for number three, we're actually coming from my bed. So, indeed, this is Sleazecast 3, in bed with Doc Sleaze. And so I thought, and obviously, as I'm here, in bed, we'd have a little stroll through some late-night pleasures and discuss some of the things we like to do in bed. So, here we go, in bed with Doc Sleaze. I don't know about you, but for me, I find these wee small hours of the morning when I can't sleep, when the wind's howling outside and the rain's pouring down as it is tonight, I find these are some of my best times for thinking, pondering some of the great philosophical questions of life and thinking about the human condition. I try to seek your answer to some of those eternal questions, such as, would it be an advantage for a man to have two penises? I mean, snakes, I'm told, have two penises, so, you know, it's a situation which occurs in nature sometimes. And, you know, clearly it must give the snake some kind of evolutionary advantage, that's why it has the two penises. Why do we only have one? I mean, you know, think of the advantages, you know. What would they be? I mean, one could be, you know, if you're on the job, so to speak, and busting for a pee. I mean, you know, you could be pleasuring your lady or even male man friend, whatever your particular, whichever way you incline, with one. And I was taking a pee with you into a bottle of something with the other one. You know, pure practicality there. I mean, nothing worse than having a full bladder when you're, you know, a bit uncomfortable. There you go, there's one advantage already. I mean, you know, or even, you know, I mean, another great question is, you know, could you pleasure two women simultaneously? I mean, would that be a possibility? Or perhaps you get double pleasure where you're doing the business with one, you know, normally, and she basically pulls off your other penis, you know, double the pleasure for you, not really for her, I suppose. You know, and the other question occurs to me there, of course, is if you had two penises, would you have four testicles? I mean, would two testicles be sufficient for two penises? Because, I mean, you know, most of us, we have the one penis, two testicles, you know. Is it the case we have the two with the one? For redundancy, possible redundancy, you know, one's a spare, one's a backup. Or does it take two, you know, to power them, you know, produce, you know, sufficient sperm and semen? So if you had two, would you need four testicles? Or could you get away with having two abnormally large testicles with two penises? Yeah, I think this is one of the big questions which needs answering. I mean, but I say all this about what you could do with them. Well, let's be honest, for most men, you know, what it would really end up with being is basically, you know, if you had two penises, it'd just be like masturbation in stereo. I mean, you know, some of us, we reach an age, we're still single, you know. I mean, I have to be honest here, you know, there's, you know, not been much action in this bed, you know, other than, you know, sort of the solitary kind and along for a while. You know, don't call the bed the wanking chariot for nothing. But brings us again to another subject, and as we're talking about things we do in bed, enjoy doing, you know, certainly for men, gotta say, the old loneliest art, so to speak, five knuckle shuffle, whatever you want to call it, you know, Mary Palmer and the Five Sisters, whatever it is. That's one of the big ones, isn't it? But maybe, of course, for most of us, it's just a straightforward, safe form of sex, you know. As Woody Allen said, sex with someone I love. But I think really, we should, right here and now, basically, applaud the guys who are into autoerotic asphyxiation. You know, the guys who sort of stick bags over their heads and whatever, you know, like that the MP did, or MEP was he? Oh, he's an MP. And, you know, they stick the old plastic bag over their heads and sort of tie bits of rope around their todgers and whatever, and sort of masturbate remotely, so to speak. You know, because I think they should be applauded, because these are the guys who turn what, for most of us, as I say, just a simple, you know, quick one off the wrist into an extreme sport. I mean, you know, you do autoerotic asphyxiation. It's not just your todger you're taking into your hands, it's your whole bloody life, you know, because, you know, a number of people who died doing it, you know. David Carradine found in that wardrobe and been at it. And say, that was MP Stephen Milligan, you know. So I say, I mean, hats off to these guys, you know. I mean, perhaps that's part of the thrill, the adrenaline rush from knowing that one false move and, you know, it's not just a sort of, you know, disappointing finish. It's literally the finish. But, you know, I've got to an age now. I mean, we're, as far as solitary sex is concerned, even that's too much bloody effort these days. I mean, yeah, too knackered to do that, to be quite honest. It's got the stage where my version of an erotic dream is a dream about having a wank. You know, that's the bloody stage my life's got to. I mean, sad or what? But, you know, although that sounds sad, say, most of the time, you know, I'm sure, yeah, I can speak for most, certainly men here, you know, we're single men, you know, we're perfectly content, though, you know, with this life of occasionally solitary sex and solitary sex wet dreams in the privacy of our own beds. And, you know, but then all of a sudden you can be made to feel really sad about it, if like I've been afflicted with several times, neighbours who engage in noisy sex. I mean, okay, it's a particular problem for me because, I mean, I live in quite an old house here, and the communal walls are quite thin, you know, and on occasion, as I say, it's like you can hear everything through that wall. I mean, and there's been a fair turnover of next door neighbours, not because I'm a bad neighbour, but because it's a rented property next door. I mean, it's empty at the moment. But a few years ago, I'm really digressing here, I had these neighbours next door. I actually thought it was some kind of upmarket knocking shop, you know, because there seemed this constant stream. I think that these girls who live there, and there seemed this constant stream of blokes and other women coming in and out of there. Anyway, back to the point. They used to really bonk incredibly loudly. And in particular, there's this bloke. I mean, I got to recognise this sort of, let's say, the mating call. The grunt, I mean, it's the grunt as he, I'm assuming as he came. It's sort of, well, it gave the impression he actually wasn't really even very good. It was just, you know, all the noise and the sound of the furies to cover up the fact he was bloody awful at it. In fact, you know, I was reminded of all this. I remember when I first heard that Lily Allen song, was it Not Fair, where she goes on about, you know, a partner, was it, she says, you know, suddenly you make this noise and suddenly it's all over, which judging what I could hear through these walls was what was going on next door. Perhaps she lived next door to the same people, who knows? but in which case, she has my sympathies. But, so I'm digressing. But yes, oh, anyway, they used to make terrible. Keep me bloody awake at night. But you start hearing that thought, all of a sudden, you know, you're quite happily, you know, having your five knuckle shuffle, or drinking your cocoa, or listening to the radio, or, you know, dreaming about a five knuckle shuffle, whatever it is you're doing, and all of a sudden you feel like a sad, sultry, lonely bastard. You're perfectly happy up to that point. And I wouldn't mind with them. I couldn't even get any peace when I was elsewhere in the house. I mean, it wasn't just at night. Any time of bloody day, this could go on next door. I mean, I remember once, one Christmas, I was sat down in my living room. It's one of those days between Christmas and New Year, which I rather love, actually. Long, lazy days. And anyway, so I was watching this old film I hadn't seen in a while on the telly. It was an Ellery Queen film. With incredibly Peter Lawford as Ellery Queen. But I say incredibly, that's another story in itself. Anyway, I was watching it, and all of a sudden I could hear this bloody noise. What the hell is going on? And all of a sudden I could hear, oh, for Christ's sake, you know, put me right off the bloody film. Like, can I get no peace anywhere in my house, even at bloody Christmas, in the air, 2 o'clock in the afternoon? You know, am I not going to be allowed to watch this in peace? Anyway, it wasn't just, you know, I mean, actually, for all I know, to be fair here, to be fair, or digression within a digression. I mean, you know, he could just do that. It actually could have been the noise he made when he came when he's masturbating. So perhaps he was at it on his own there. But, you know, I could usually hear a woman, unless he was a ventriloquist, play both parts or something, I don't know. Anyway, it wasn't just sex toys that was the problem with them. They used to play music really loudly, often to all hours. And I remember once, it was a Thursday, and it was, must have been February or something like that. There's snow on the ground, it's freezing cold. When they were in there, they'd been playing bloody records. But to be honest, they were playing the same record. I say record shows, my age, CDs. This is before MP3s. It was that killer song, you know, Somebody Told Me All That. And they kept bloody playing it continuously, like on a loop. And, anyway, I went down the pub to get away from it. And, when I came back, they were still bloody playing this song. I mean, this was 11:30 or so. I came back and they were playing this bloody thing over and over again. And I thought, you know, you bastards, I'm not sorry now that on my way back from the pub, I actually, because I say there's snow on the ground, and I knew that this fellow with noise drove this BMW Roadster, and I must admit, I'd written in the snow on his bonnet my opinions on the size of the manhood of the kind of people who drive such cars, because I thought, to hell with it, he's not going to know what my handwriting looks like, is he? He's not going to go, no, it's me. And I take him, I heard him playing this, and it went on, and I thought, yeah, I'm not bloody sorry I did that. Anyway, not only was I not sorry I wrote obscenities on this car, I also then got so fed up with it. I went up, because I was in bed by trying to sleep, because I had to get up for work the next morning. And so I just went back downstairs, and I basically got out my one of my Deep Purple CDs, Machine Head, personal favourite, the remastered 20th anniversary edition, and was it 25th, I can't remember. Anyway, so I stuck that on the old CD player, whacked up the volume, because I figured, you know, I've heard this so many times and I actually like it, I can probably sleep through this. So I just whacked on, went back to bed, and I tell you, they soon bloody stopped playing that killer song. I tell you, I think it only took until sort of halfway through Highway Star before they got the message. I tell you, they didn't play any bloody music loudly for a very long time after that. You know, and if they had, I would just have, you know, escalated it basically by, I mean, something I wouldn't like to do because it wouldn't be pleasant for me either. It's, you know, like sticking on one of my Black Sabbath CDs, you know. It's just been a blast of Ozzy Osbourne, you know. That's enough to shut anyone up. Anyway, thankfully, I think a few months of that, they moved out, thank God. And whilst I've had noisy neighbours since then, on and off, various of them can be very noisy, none have gone like that all the bloody time.
Late night TV. Now, for many people, it's one of the pleasures they have when they're lying in bed. I must have to confess to you, personally, it's not something I generally do. I don't actually have a television in my bedroom. It's one of the advantages and pleasures of living on one's own, is if I want to sit up half the night watching television, I can do it down in my living room, crashed up my sofa, watching my widescreen TV down there, getting all the full benefits of it. So consequently, for me, watching television in bed is a relatively rare treat, confined to when I'm either staying with someone who has a television in their spare room, or when I'm staying in a hotel somewhere. I mean, usually, as I say here, the best I have is a radio. You can probably hear burbling in the background. But what's the essence of late night TV? What is it we like to watch in terms of late night TV? I remember when I was a kid, late night TV, well, you know, in those days you were lucky if it went on after midnight. And even then it was after, only at weekends, basically. I remember on Saturday nights, the BBC Two had the midnight movie, which confusingly, when you're a child, actually always started at about 11:30, but the point was it ran through midnight. Always a mixed bag of stuff there. But later, of course, and they had the old horror double bills. I remember quite with lots of old horror movies that way. But more recent years, of course, with the advent of all-night television, so late-night TV is become something else. These days, it just seems to consist on Channel 5 of endless casino programs, and, you know, people phoning in, idiots phoning in to bet on roulette wheels. And whereas ITV is now the zone, isn't it, with a combination of bits of shopping channels and, again, gambling. But there was a great phase, I remember, actually, basically, when Channel 4 first came on the air, and then later when Channel 5 first came on, we had some really amazing low-budget, cheapskate late-night TV. I mean, it all seemed to be really sort of aimed clearly at people who've just staggered back in from the pub. And concerned, you know, sort of combination of sleaze, sex, idiotic game shows and the like. I mean, all those strange chat shows where Oliver Reed would get drunk and molest women, or whatever. Perhaps I just imagined that. I mean, actually, perhaps he just imagined it. But I shouldn't know why he went on TV today. He's probably there at home all the time. Slandering Oliver Reed, if that's possible. The great Oliver Reed, big fan. I'm sure he wouldn't mind. God rest his soul. I've often thought, you know, if I was in charge of making late night TV programmes, I mean, you want a really good lineup of late night sleaze and things that would get in those few number of viewers, you know, who must be watching then, you know, insomniacs, drunkards, you know, people still on still high on drugs or whatever, I don't know, burglars. too many burglars break into people's houses to watch the televisions. I mean, you know, this day and age, televisions are cheap enough. Sure, buy your own. You have to break into someone else's house on the basis, oh, they got a better TV than me. I'll watch it here. Easier than carrying it out. Especially those flat screen TVs. Very easy to carry out. Not like the big old. I've still got one of the big old ones. You know, big old widescreen. I'm quite fond of it. I mean, I haven't replaced it because basically it works, but you know, that'd be a bucket to try and lug out of my house. So, I mean, if you go burglar broke off that, it would be just to sit on my sofa and watch it. But you know, I think I've got the ultimate format hit, really, for late night TV show. I mean, I'll come straight to the point. It's Celebrity Tit Wank. You know, it's got all there in the title, hasn't it? Celebrities, tits, and wanking. I mean, you know. What could all be three better subjects for late night TV aimed at people who've just staggered in from the pub or are sort of half awake and think they're having an out of body experience? I mean, well, let's get down to the nitty gritty of it. The actual format of this show, I mean, again, is, I think, is a winner. I mean, because when I say celebrities in the title, celebrity titwank, of course, you and I both know really what I'm talking about. The kind of celebrities in inverted commas who have come to public notice, if that's the way of describing it, through reality TV shows, that sort of thing, you know, and they're absolutely desperate to cling on to their 5 minutes of fame, their little time in the spotlight, and they, so this exploits their naked desire, their desperation to cling to fame such as it is, even to the extent they're willing to go on a show where basically, format's very simple, you have some birds with big knockers. So a bit sexist saying birds with big knockers, but you know, I'm sorry, I'm a child of the 60s. I saw too many Michael Caine films, I still want birds. I say Michael Caine films, too many episodes on the buses. Anyway, ladies with large mammary glands. And basically, you have a studio audience at home even. You can phone in and bet on how long it takes one of these minor male celebrities, how long it takes them to blow their load completely over this girl's knockers, some girl's knockers, while she gives him a tit wank. You know, so it's got the gambling aspect in there as well. You know, who's going to blow their load first? Are they going to give a tit wank? Is it going to be some bloke who got, you know, Frankie Kokoza, is it, got kicked off of X Factor for snorting cocaine? Is he going to ejaculate first over that girl's lovely melons? Or would he manage to hold out longer than say, I don't know, because I don't watch these bloody programmes, who are these people? Then Louis Spett's bad example, he'd hold out all day from whacking off and, yeah, jacking off over some girl's knockers. But you catch the drift. So there you go, celebrity tit wank. So you got it all. Tits, celebrities, masturbation, and the gambling aspect. But you know, okay, yeah, it's a bit sex, obviously a bit heterosexually orientated, let's say, show, you know. Yeah, I mean, okay, you can have variations perhaps where, you know, you have celebrity girls with big knockers. Again, when I say celebrity, I mean from some reality TV program, and they got to see how quickly they can get some bloke to jerk off over the knockers. I say variation, it's actually the same thing. It's just you're betting on someone different. But if that really isn't your boat, another one. Up the Chutney. Okay. Again, title's really self-explanatory. You get a series of well-known people, you know, celebrities, what of a better word, and basically the studio audience have to guess which of them most regularly takes up the chutney from the expressions on their faces as they're anally penetrated by the host of the show. Yeah, so, you know, if you see, you know, I don't know, you know, maybe Louis Spence again, you know, obviously it's not going to trouble him much probably. You have a blissful look on his face, or you know, some rampant heterosexual minor celebrity, or one who purports to be, you know, Peter Andre, say, you know, he's probably there going, you know, an absolute agony, eyes popping out, whatever, tears rolling down his face, you know, that, or so you'd hope, or maybe he doesn't, in which case what he's likely to use, hey, he takes up the chutney on a regular basis. Not that I'm saying that Peter Andre does for legal reasons. This is merely an example. I have no evidence whatsoever that he's ever indulged in such sexual practices. But you can have another round, a more light-hearted round, where the contestants have to guess what it is the host has smeared his penis with before penetrating them. Yeah. Yeah, could it be, you know, tomato ketchup, brown sauce on his knob, mayonnaise, or maybe even chutney? You see? Yeah, bit of humour. Yeah, it's what they all want, really. So, Celebrity Titwank at the Chutney. There we have a double bill of great late night programming. But there's more. There's more, my friends. I have more. I thought this is other great format. I think possibly for, you know, Keith Allen comes to mind as being the man for this format. I mean, it could work for someone else. But basically, it's called Keith Allen Gets the Horn. Now, no, it's not what you're thinking, because, you know, I don't know about you, I can't imagine that anyone would actually want to see Keith Allen with an erection. So it's, or getting sexually aroused over anyone. You know, nobody wants to see that. You know, well, presumably somebody did, because he's found enough kids. You know, in and out of various marriages. So presumably somebody wanted to see it. Or maybe they didn't want to see it. Who knows? It just happened. Yes, it does. But instead, the format is basically Keith Allen is sent out with one of those long horns, long trumpets, you know, like the types that heralds use, you know. And basically what he does is he sneaks up on some unsuspecting well-known personage with his horn. So, like, you know, after he filmed in summer, say, so like, say, you know, Maggie Thatcher is snoozing, you know, senile as she is, snoozing in her armchair in a living room, window open, nice summer breeze coming through, all that, and Keith Allen sticks his horn through, who her misses, through the window, right up, so it's right beside her ear. She's there snoring away, unsuspecting, bell end of the horn, it's there, you know, got that in there, bell end, right next to ear, and, no, he doesn't blow that, he farts down it, basically. Imagine the shot, suddenly his baggie, snoozing away, you know, dreaming about her halcyon days in number 10, you know, and all of a sudden, this huge fart erupts next to her. Jesus Christ, she'll be out of that chair, clutching her chest, having a heart attack like nobody's business. Brilliant format. You see, every week then, Keith Allen can go out to see if he can give a heart attack to some elderly celebrity by farting through a long horn at them. And of course, it goes along and gives him time to leg it, get away, in case it doesn't give him a heart attack and they try and come after him. Great format. I really think Keith Allen could be up for that, you know. Yeah, a little bit irreverent, you know, cheeky, goes with his image, you know. Finally, though, still not finished, you know, because what I'm trying to do here is present an entire schedule of late night programming, you know. Then I've, you know, I'll go off and present this whole thing to, I don't know, Channel 5 or whatever, or, you know, the most likely destination. Or, you know, one of those weird channels you get on digital, you know, in the upper reaches of the channels, you know. UK filth, that sort of thing, you know. Yeah, sorry, digressing a bit. Have you ever watched those? I mean, yeah, they have those 5-minute previews on the porn ones. You know, I don't know what anyone else does with the other 3 minutes. Yeah, stole a gag there from Chris Moyles. And, but no, they're quite shocking. I mean, not that I'm shocked by pornography as such. But these little 5 minutes, it's just like the titles of the programming there, like, you know, Counts from Estate Slags 2. You know, I mean, apart from that, this implies that, obviously, this been a previous program. But, you know, is this what we've come to in today's... So this is what our civilization has come to. Putting on it for the pleasure of depraved insomniacs, programs about council estates. I mean, for one thing, it's inaccurate. How many bloody council estates are they forced to sell off all their sodding housing? The housing associations, for God's sake. You know, highly inaccurate. And this implication that somehow women on, inverted commas, council estates are all slags. I mean, on every level, it's highly offensive. But I digress. Getting back to my final idea, late night programme. As well, I don't actually have a title for, but I thought, you know, great format, you know, it's basically where somebody has to go, some reporter has to go out and provoke some celebrity who is well known for being drunk and violent, say, you know, and basically trying to survive their attack. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, running the Pamplona Bulls, perhaps, you know. You know, basically you find Russell Crowe, say, staggering around the lobby of some hotel, you know, probably not the one he's staying in, but he's so pissed, you know, that he's, he, again, you know, for legal reasons, you know, this is merely an example. I'm not saying Russ, I'm sure he's teetotal. Anyway, you and basically, you know, you sort of, you know, go in there and basically wind him up, you know, you tell him, I don't know, you know, Australians, you're shit at rugby, something like that, you know. You know, elf stewards are puffed up, something like that, you know, that'll get him going. And yeah, old Gibson's a puffter, he's a dabble puffter, yeah, that'll no doubt get Russell Crowe going. And then you have to try and escape as he charges through the hotel lobby and out throwing phones, furniture, God knows what else at you. Again, great format, a celebrity rage perhaps, something that you could call it. Great for it, because everybody likes to see a celebrity making a tit of themselves, especially when they're drunk and angry and violent. That's what we like. I mean, I'm only sorry that Oliver Reed is no longer with us, because he'd be a perfect candidate for this. You know, no one did drunk and violent as well as him, you know. Or perhaps Rip Torn these days. I know he's a bit past it, but, you know, he is well known for getting roaring drunk and attempting to break into banks thinking they're his home. Be another good candidate. But as I say, here we have it, my complete lineup here, my package now of late night television programs. So it's now just a case of pitching these, you know, to the right channel, and I think it could be on to a winner. Late at night, lying in bed, I can't sleep. It's a time when my mind sometimes turns to some of the great eternal mysteries of the world. You know, like, who built Stonehenge? Does the Yeti really exist? What is the Loch Ness Monster? And whatever happened to John Noakes? Because, you know, that is one of the great mysteries, isn't it? John Noakes, I mean, when I was a child, he just seemed to be a television fixture, you know, with a... on Blue Peter every week, well, twice a week in those days Blue Peter was on. And old Noakes, you could rely on him and all his daredevil things he used to do. Yeah, but eventually, of course, he got tired of being crapped on by elephants and climbing up Nelson's Column. And, of course, he left. And for a while he had, all too briefly actually, he had his own series, Go With Noakes. Do you remember that? Go With Noakes. It's more adult orientated, you see. I mean, well, obviously you want to move out of kids' programmes. And as the title implies with Go With Noakes, I mean, basically every week he'd approach some eligible woman, not famous woman, maybe not even famous, just some woman he fancied from afar, and try and get someone to go with him. You know, that was it. That was the format. Successful for a while, but then finally after a couple of series, the very last ever episode, of course, he was spurned by Irene Handel, a long-term fixation of his, you know. She had her teeth in and her elasticated stockings on, you know, the ones of the varicose veins. You know, she's a bit of a sex goddess. Anyway, apparently she spurned him for a Hoover attachment. So legend has it. And according to urban legend, what he then did was he embarked on a round the world sailing trip in his yacht. But he set sail, never to be seen again. I mean, you know, extensive searches were launched, you know, despite sort of Twickenham, Cricklewood, no sign of him. But I think they were looking in the wrong place. Because I think they should be looking further south, South London. Because, I mean, I've heard stories from our salty old sea dogs. But basically, he vanished when he sailed into the notorious Bermondsey Triangle in South London. You know, I mean, everybody's heard of the Bermuda Triangle. You know, lots of ships and planes vanish there. But believe me, the Bermondsey Triangle is less well known. But has been no less a graveyard for many a sailor. You know, well, that covers a you know, an area of a few miles. most people agree, most experts agree. I mean, Arthur C. Clarke, late Arthur C. Clarke agreed with me on this. I remember an episode of his, you know, Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World, when he looked into the Bermondsey Triangle mystery. And he agreed the epicentre of it was in fact the bedroom of Mrs. Gladys Fuchs. And there is some evidence, some witnesses who claim, you know, that's where John Noakes founded, basically. They do say he founded on her breasts. And after several days foundering there, you know, lashed by wind and rain, he he managed to move south, but was completely swallowed, so they say, by the Bermondsey Triangle, which lay south of Mrs. Fuchs's magnificent breasts, which have been likened to the clashing rocks of myth. There have, of course, been attempts over the years to trace him. I mean, most notably the BBC, of course, launched an expedition to try and find him. I mean, really, they were motivated mainly by the fact they wanted to recover that £3.50 from him. Yeah, they mistakenly paid him, because mistakenly once, when he was doing a Blue Peter report, making a film at a glassworks in Derby, they mistakenly booked him a first-class railway ticket instead of the usual second class, and obviously they wanted to go recover that £3.50 difference. So, with certain logic, they sent out a successor from Blue Peter, Peter Duncan, who also, when he left Blue Peter, of course, had his own series, not dissimilar to Go With Noakes, called Duncan Dares. Sadly, the episode where he tried to find John Noakes has never been aired. I mean, originally it was sandwiched between the episode where he dared to make a porn movie, and the other episode where he dared to stick his todger between the jaws of a man-eating tiger. But anyway, this other episode where he looked for John Noakes saw him scouring. I mean, again, he was off target. He scoured Soho, basically. I mean, but it's considered too traumatic to be shown in sort of children's television slot, because I mean, yeah, there's some very traumatic scenes of being bitten by wild prostitutes, and being chased out of a gay bar by a group of semi-naked savages flashing their arses, which he quite enjoyed. I mean, he escaped by the skin of his teeth, of course. But as I say, sadly, he never located John Noakes, and the mystery does endure to this day. Whatever happened to John Noakes? Yeah. I've often thought about mounting an expedition myself to the Bermondsey Triangle to try and locate Noakesy. But, you know, I'm afraid, you know, I'm not an explorer. I'm not the right man for the job. I mean, I'm not sure whether you should send, you know, perhaps, you know, that Bear Grylls or someone like that. Maybe these He-Man types, you know, maybe he's the man to tackle Gladys Fuchs's triangle. I don't know. But, yeah, that's one of the things I often ponder in the wee small hours of the morning. So there you have it, In Bed with Doc Sleaze. An interesting experiment. A bit of a bugger, actually, because this has been recorded over what seems like an interminable period of us. Like, it's actually really only a couple of weeks, but the problem being that usually when I think about recording it, sort of late at night when I'm in bed, I'm usually too bloody knackered to actually bother. So it seems we've gone on and on the recording process, and even then, obviously, I listen back to it, and I've been too tired, and I've forgotten to sort of say things I wanted to say, and whatever. So in the end, been many takes, and the finished product is basically pieced together from fragments Hopefully it sounds coherent. I think next time we'll be back to recording this in my car. See, I'm threatening you next time again. Sleazecast 4 on the horizon. Because that seems to be a much faster process. But now, of course, we're before I go to sleep myself, face the prospect again of a suitable sign off. So we've done Kent Walton. I've pondered the two Ronnies. I've tried Dave Allen. I'm already a bit of a loss now. I've run out of role models here for sign-offs. I don't know. Good night, don't let the bed bugs bite. I don't know. I mean, that's I never like that. It implies that we're somehow I think you're unhygienic if I say that and you've got bed bugs. I mean, I know most people actually have bed bugs, but you know what I mean. Not nice, really, is it? It's not a nice thought either. You know, being bitten by bed bugs all night. I certainly haven't had bed bugs. You know, infestation. When I changed these bed clothes at least 2 weeks ago. I jest. That's an old joke, actually, to steal an old joke from Spike Milligan. It's about how do you repel borders? Don't bother changing the sheets. Boom. Thank you, Spike Milligan, circa 1953. But, hope it's the best. But, I don't know. Good night and God bless, what about that? I mean, not good for those of us who are atheists, perhaps. Good night and Stephen Dawkins, bless, perhaps, I don't know. I don't know. Till the next time, folks, just keep it sleazy, okay?
That was the Sleazecast, a Sleaze Multimedia production, featuring Doc Sleaze. Announcer Suzy Sleaze. Produced by Doc Sleaze for the Sleaze.